Thank you, Sean. It's great to be back here at the symposium. And thanks very much, Brian, for organising, doing such a great job at organising this conference. I spoke 4 years ago, as Sean said, in a session that was also about international developments. At that point, our industry was close to agreement on funding the new payments platform, or the NPP, which is a new set of rails to allow real-time payments. Funding was indeed secured soon afterwards, and the hard work began, leading to the public launch of the NPP in February this year. Today I'm going to give you an update on our project and provide some early lessons learned. I'll start with some brief NPP history. Over 2010 to 2012, the Reserve Bank consulted with the payments industry. We looked at international developments, and we then produced a report which was called the Strategic Review of Innovation in the Payment System. We identified a number of gaps in the payment system that we anticipated would become increasingly problematic. It wasn't a problem of Australian financial institutions not being innovative and not competing strongly in the services that they offered to their customers. Far from it. Rather, it was a sense that there are issues in the cooperative elements of some of our payment systems. So in Barry Nalbeth's terms this morning, banks had trouble doing collaborative innovation. So our review concluded that we should be more proactive in setting strategic objectives for the payment systems. These were high-level goals. We weren't going to tell them how to do it, but we would set some objectives. And the initial set of objectives set by the bank reflected the gaps that we identified in the review. And four of those were likely to require the industry to work together to build a new payment system. These were to provide end users of the payment system with first real-time payments. That is, payments where the recipient has visibility and use of the funds in seconds rather than hours or days. Second, the ability to make those payments outside of normal banking hours, indeed on a 24/7 basis. Third, the ability to send more information with payments. In our case, that meant more than the 18 characters that can be sent with a payment in our direct entry system, which is roughly the equivalent of your ACH. We also noted the desirability of moving to ISO 20022, a flexible, modern, international messaging standard. And fourth, the fourth gap was the ability to address payments in a relatively simple way, such as to an email address or a phone number. This is in contrast to the 15 or so digits that must be entered for a payment in our direct entry system. The Australian Payments Network, previously known as APCA, is our industry association, and it consists both of, represents large and small institutions working together. It coordinated the industry's response to the strategic review. It came up with a detailed proposal for some new infrastructure that would meet the bank's objectives. Over the next year and a half, the industry contracted with KPMG to help in managing the project, and it worked on project planning, development of business requirements, and the tenders for the service providers. Financial institutions were then invited to subscribe as shareholders to NPP Australia Limited, or NPPA, which was a new company that was established to operate the NPP as a mutually owned utility infrastructure. Then in late 2014, 13 institutions, including the Reserve Bank, agreed to become shareholders in NPPA, which then signed a contract with SWIFT to build the NPP. Importantly, three of those 13 entities are aggregators or service providers to the smaller institutions. As the build of the NPP progressed, those three were working both on their own connections to the NPP and on building indirect connectivity solutions. And as a result, when the NPP went live, there were around 40 smaller banks, credit unions and building societies that were able to offer NPP services to their customers. So what is the NPP? It consists of two sets of new infrastructure, the NPP basic infrastructure and the Reserve Bank's Fast Settlement Service, or FSS. The basic infrastructure is operated by SWIFT under a contract with NPPA. It includes a new domestic network that connects participants to each other and to the FSS. This is via payment gateways that route ISO 20022 messages with up to 280 characters of data across the network. So the NPP is a distributed rather than a hub-based network. Importantly, the basic infrastructure also includes an addressing service where participants can register a customer's transaction account to an identifier or an alias called a PayID. A PayID can be a phone number, an email address, or in the case of businesses, it can be an Australian business number. The second element of the NPP is the fast settlement service. It's a separate service of RITS, which is the Reserve Bank's RTGS system. The FSS allows real-time settlement of each NPP payment across exchange settlement accounts. That's the equivalent of your Fed funds accounts. So that is, there's no netting or batching. Payments are settled line by line in real time. This means that participants can make funds available to recipient customers immediately without settlement risk. Another element of the NPP ecosystem, shown at the top of this graph here, are overlay services. And the basic infrastructure can be thought of as a set of rails, and overlay services will be commercial payment services that can be thought of as the trains that will use the NPP rails and will allow all sorts of payment services to be offered to end users. They might be simple rule books that just set standards for participants, or they might be more complex payment solutions that involve new message types and interactions with external entities and databases. The first overlay service is called OSCO by BPAY. It's a basic fast payment with enhanced data. But BPAY also has plans for additional overlays, including a request to pay and a payment with document service. NPPA is also working actively with other potential overlay service providers. The NPP became operational for industry live proving in November last year and was launched, as Sean said, for public use on the 13th of February this year. This involved around 50 institutions initially, and that number's now increased to around 65, which is about close to half of all authorised deposit-taking institutions in Australia. As with any completely new payment system, FIs have mostly taken a staged approach in their rollout strategies, gradually introducing services, channels, customer segments, etc. In some cases, this is to manage risk and enable them to fine-tune their systems and their processes. And in other cases, it just reflected different stages of readiness. Initially, our four major banks have focused mainly on consumers ahead of businesses, and the rollout to consumers is now at a fairly advanced stage. There are more than 50 million Australian bank accounts accessible via the NPP, with that number growing steadily. The number of PayID registrations has just reached 2 million, and to provide some context, Australia's got a population of 25 million. Monthly volumes of NPP transactions have been growing strongly. One statistic that you may find interesting is that the number of payments occurring through the NPP has already surpassed the number of cheques that are being written by Australian households and businesses, as this graph illustrates. An international comparison might also be of interest. Of course, each country is its own special case. But the adoption of the NPP appears to be proceeding at least as quickly as occurred for some other fast payment systems. Actually, the early indications are it's going faster than either of those systems shown there. But as long as the rollout of the NPP to household customers hasn't been complete, advertising of OSCO by BPAY has been limited. But I expect that that'll pick up and that FIs will also be stepping up their promotion of real-time payments to their customers. So the value and volume of NPP transactions is likely to continue to grow strongly. So while it was launched only eight months ago, I think it's possible to make a number of observations or some early lessons learned that might be of interest to you. Number one, the presence of a well-resourced project office from KPMG as well as from APCA and then NPPA that was independent of the participants was important in the design, build and test phases. It ensured that there were high-quality papers for meetings, it brought skills that might not have been readily available from participants, and it provided independent perspectives during the debates about the design and build. And those debates sometimes were quite contentious. Second, having three aggregators or service providers involved as participants was important in ensuring broad reach, and I think probably the public legitimacy for the NPP too. The majority of the institutions that were ready to go on day one were actually small banks, credit unions and building societies that were using the services of the aggregators. Third, the build of the basic infrastructure and the FSS were of course major projects, but the internal builds for participants were the most challenging tasks. Large banks have complex systems, and upgrading them to allow real-time posting, 24/7 operations, etc., has taken longer than expected for some of them. Fourth, ubiquity, or more correctly, near ubiquity is important, I think. It's hard for any new payment system or for individual participants to go out and market aggressively to customers until there's a critical mass of other institutions and accounts on board. Of course, balancing this point and the previous one is a challenge. Yes, decisions to launch to the public can only occur once a critical mass of participants is ready, but a program can't be expected to move only at the pace of the slowest participant. Fifth, real-time settlement is going well. The challenges raised by out-of-hours and weekend operations can be met by central bank liquidity arrangements. So during normal business hours, banks can easily move balances in their exchange settlement accounts between the FSS and our main RTGS system. But then those balances are then all moved to the FSS overnight and on weekends. About 5 years ago, some banks might have questioned the case for moving to real-time payments, but I don't think anyone is questioning that case now. Indeed, the initial signs are that banks are looking to move some of their direct entry payments over to the fast rails sooner than we expected. Similarly, I think there's general recognition that the decision to move to ISO 20022 will be a very important one for future innovation. Seven, we think it was very important to have the addressing service ready to launch on day one. Pay IDs get around the problems of end users having to remember and enter lots of numbers. They help avoid fat finger problems and mistaken payments, and they can reduce fraud. The reduction in mistaken payments and fraud comes from the fact that the addressing service sends back the full account name to the payer before they authorise the payment to the alias. Eighth, the involvement of the central bank from the policy side, as well as the delivery of settlement arrangements and as a banking service provider, has been important, we think. I suspect some in the industry might have initially had concerns about having the Reserve Bank involved, but that they'd recognise now that our involvement helped to get some of the key aspects right. Nine, the fact that the basic infrastructure will be operated as an industry utility available to all, with commercial payment services to be provided by separate overlay services, was helpful in getting agreement among the participants in the design phase. Tenth and finally, with the initial build mostly complete, the industry's got ambitious plans for additional functionality. Some of this could be potentially delivered via overlay services, but I think it's also likely that there'll be additional central functionality provided or arranged by NPPA. For example, possibly a central consent and mandate service that could be used to enable direct debits through the NPP. As NPP increases its capabilities, it'll look to new means of providing functionality. For example, on Friday it announced an API framework with three sample APIs. So, Sean, I'll wrap up there. There's, of course, a lot of change underway in payments, both in technology and business models. So we think there's no shortage of work for our payments industry as it completes the initial build of the NPP and then works to meet the evolving needs of its customers. But overall, the Reserve Bank and I think the Australian, the broader payments industry and the wider community is very positive about our experience as real-time payments have moved from an idea to a reality, and as we've seen this major upgrade to our payments infrastructure. As we've undertaken that journey, we've benefited from the experience of other countries, and I'm looking forward to hearing some additional perspectives during this symposium. Thank you.
Thank you, Tony. There's a number of burning questions people have, but we did a little panel prep, as you can imagine, with the panelists, and it's evident why Tony's a PhD, because because he did his homework. And he used most of my questions, or dealt with them with his last slide there, which was fantastic. But I have one question, and then I'll open it to the audience. One question I wanted to ask was about the non-bank participation or access to this capability. How has the Australian model dealt with that key question?
Well, access is something that that is under review, but the NPP envisages a number of different access arrangements. So there can be direct participants, FIs, or indirect participants that do either indirect clearing or indirect settlement. Then we've got these entities called connected entities. We've got these entities called connected entities, which are probably smaller FIs who come in through a participant, but they can also be non-bank. They can also be non-financial corporates using. Using a participant and submitting payment instructions. There's also an additional type of entity that we don't have any examples of, but it's called an identified institution. But it's an institution that would be able to submit non-value messages to the NPP. So that is payment instructions, but payment initiation messages, but it wouldn't, for example, be able to send clearing or settlement messages. But then the other thing is that we actually think that most sort of fintechs and non-financial corporates may not necessarily need a connection to the NPP. They just might need good services from their FI. But up till now, banks have been focusing on their internal bills and getting their services to consumers ready. We expect the services to corporates, to non-financials, to be built out, but there's a number of different models that we envisage, and when and if they prove to be inadequate, we can look to work on that.
Good. Let me open it up. I'm going to take two or three questions for Dr. Richards, and then we'll move on to Europe.
I'm going to ask a compound question. You had a bullet up there that said, "Don't worry, questions, the case for real time." Part A is, when you say no one, is that strictly financial services providers, people who are in the network, or does that extend to consumers of payments, whether they're consumers or businesses? And then on the same question, I'm gonna make a proposition that that's not the same in the United States, that there's still a lot of question as to the value of faster payments. Not within this room, but within the people we're trying to sell to. So why is it that you think that there is this universal agreement that faster is a better thing?
Okay, several questions there.
I warned you.
When I said that no one questions the case for real-time payments now, I suppose that was my assessment. You know, when we did the strategic review of innovation in the payment system, so that's now 6 to 8 years ago, I think we saw that consumers and businesses were demanding immediacy in many aspects of their lives. So it seemed odd that they wouldn't also demand it for their financial lives as well. So our sense 5 or 6 years ago was that demand for real-time payments was there from households and businesses. And it was banks that were dragging the chain that probably accepted that they would have to do this, but wanted to do it at their own pace because they've got complex systems and it was going to take them time to do it. But I don't think that anyone in that any of the participants in the NPP, even those who were a bit reluctant to sign up 4 or 5 years ago, I think they all accept that it's the right thing to do. Basically, if you're a financial institution, 5 years ago, if you're a financial institution and you were saying that you weren't going to provide your customers with real-time payments, you were basically saying, I'm happy to let my customers become the customers of somebody else who will provide real-time payments for them because they will demand it. On the question of was there a business case, you know, what's the business case, I think clearly real-time payments are going to cannibalise some other payment systems, but, well, it's better that you cannibalise, that the banks cannibalise their own payment systems than have someone else come in and just take their customers from them. So I think the plan is that opening up this new set of payment rails will allow the banks to close down some existing payment rails, and so there will be cost savings for them. As I say, banks are moving their direct lending payments over to the NPP faster than expected. 5 years ago, people would say, "Oh, direct entry is fit for purpose, leave it there forever." And now I think they're saying, "We've got these new payment rails, we've got new functionality, why not use them?" So I think that's largely answered.
So since Peter asked six questions, we have one more part. Robbie.
Hi, thank you for that wonderful presentation.
Release the microphone, please.
Hit that little red button.
Thank you for the presentation. It was very helpful from an international perspective. One quick question, maybe not so quick. Who carries settlement risk?
I'm not quite sure how to answer that, but I take you through the payment flows, but every payment is settled in real time. So,
so does that mean it's credit push?
Yeah, initially they're all push payments. We haven't done full payments yet, but we've taken away settlement risk. So FIs have got no reason not to provide immediate funds availability to their customers because they know that they've got the funds in their exchange settlement account.
Thank you.
Hey,
one more,
Lynn. So, Tony, you talked about have displaying the full name. Tony, you talked about the importance of displaying full name associated with alias. What other types of consumer protection education mechanisms have you put in place?
I'd say that's something mostly for financial institutions and their customers. One thing that the industry did was to say that, to ensure that you can only register for a pay ID through your online banking app, so that a fraudster can't just go and register a pay ID, can't link a pay ID to an account without having access to it, without having the online details for that account. The other thing I'd say is that the liability rules put a harsh penalty on banks that register a pay ID that they shouldn't have. So that if an FI registers a pay ID in a way that doesn't meet the industry requirements, it would be liable for the fraud that occurs